get them girls loose, loose. TJR. You don't get the world loose, loose. You don't get money,
Mr. Worldwide.
But I do.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl. And hey, if you need a good lawyer, go ahead and call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Serious lawyers for serious injuries. 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk and Elk, proud sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Go Browns. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here with you in the Dog Bowl in Berea. 216-578-0850. I'm pretty sure you guys have some things to say, so let's go. Ryan in Wakeman. All right, we'll try Adam in Ryan and Wakeman, how you doing?
Hey, are you there?
Yes, sir. Here. How are you?
Hey, not bad. How's it going?
Good, man.
Good, good. You know, I have to listen to you. You talked me off of a ledge a little bit. But, man, it's really disconcerting to see, like, how dysfunctional this team, you know, with these reports coming out, how much dysfunctional this team is. You know, like, as much as I try to, like, look at this team to see it as it's, you know, building and looking good, you know, we've got an up-and-coming defense. The line's stacked. The linebackers are solid. You know, we have an elite secondary, especially if Gilbert can get it on track.
Yep.
But, man, it's just year after year, it's been so bad. It's almost like Art Modell was trying to save us from all these bad years of football, you know, by moving it so we didn't have to deal with this and just not have a team and not have to deal with the losing. But, no, we had to insist to get a team back and deal with this losing. And I don't know when it's going to end. You know, watching the Super Bowl, you're like, man, could you imagine if the Browns were there? I couldn't imagine if the Browns won 10 games in a season. I just couldn't imagine it. It seems so far away, you know, and again, with these stories coming up, I mean, it's really disconcerting. But, and a side note, when you're not reporting these things and you're in the building every day, it makes me really confused how people like Jason Locke and Ford can even get these stories, because I'm like, well, these guys that are in the building every day on the radio, they don't know about this, or they're not reporting this stuff. And I'm like, so how do they get it? So,
well, you got team sources, you've got people who have been here, perhaps people that are, you know, no longer here, and perhaps there are people here talking, which I would think would be a major organizational problem if that is in fact the case. There were strides made on the 53-man roster. That's irrefutable. There have been strides made in the win column. That's irrefutable as well. Those are just facts. This is an organization that has not had any type of continuity whatsoever for many, 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 many years. They are certainly trying to get that continuity now, and I know that Kyle Shanahan left on the offensive coordinator side of things, but again, he wanted to leave. They were not obligated to leave. They allowed him to leave, and for reasons that Mike Pettine detailed, and now they didn't get to talk about much of the departure other than that, other saying that, you know, they didn't want somebody who didn't want to be here to be in the building. I think that there are things that, you know, Jimmy Haslam didn't draft somebody. I do know that. I do know that the draft board that is referenced in there, where it said Derek Carr, Teddy Bridgewater, and Johnny Manziel, that's not accurate either. I do know that on the day of the draft, as I've said since then, and in fact the team has said as well, that at the time Johnny Manziel was drafted, he was the number one quarterback on the Browns board. When Justin Gilbert was drafted, he was also the number one cornerback on the Browns board. And they have said that. You can go back and look at the transcripts. They have said those things. I know those things as well to be true. As far as the issues and the text gate, you know, that's all going to play itself out. That's a league investigation. I don't know what happened there. In terms of the cohesion between Ray Farmer and Mike Pettine, as I talked about it, anytime you work with somebody, there are going to be, as they alluded to, you know, a learning curve. They have built on their first year together. They seem to be in very good shape. Mike Pettine has assembled a staff now that's all his guys. The defensive staff stayed completely intact. So for people saying that everybody wants to come out of here, not a single person left the defensive staff, and not a single person left the offensive staff either, because the only people who were gone, Kyle Shanahan, and of course the wide receiver coach Mike McDaniel and Dow Law, they were either let go or, you know, in Kyle's case, Kyle got his release from the team. So people aren't necessarily fleeing here. That is not what's happened. Nobody has left the personnel department that I'm aware of. So there are things in here that are, again, Where there's smoke, you know, maybe there is fire. But I do not believe things to be as bad as they are being made out to be right here. And I like Jason Lockenfour quite a bit. He is a fine man. Worked with him at CBS for many, many years. I don't know necessarily who he's talking to here, obviously. But some of it is certainly it does not paint the Browns in a very favorable light. But a lot of organizations, the difference is a lot of organizations that people point out to me on Twitter, like, look, the Patriots went through with Ray Rice, and look at, of course, you know what the Patriots went through with Spygate and now Deflategate, and the Ravens with Ray Rice, and that's true. But those are organizations that have been winning and are winning, and you know they were able to overcome it. The Browns are looking to win, and it's an organization that is perceived to be dysfunctional for so many reasons. You know, different offensive coordinator every year. They had three head coaches in 3 years. No regime has really stayed here. There's been no continuity. So it's tough. It is tough. And, you know, no, but blind faith. People aren't going to necessarily exercise blind faith. I just know in terms of personnel, this team is in a better place than it was a year ago. And I know that in terms of in the win-loss column, they're better than they were a year ago. And in my opinion, the leadership is in a better place now with a year under their belt, a little bit of experience. I still fully believe in Mike Pettine. I still fully believe in Ray Farmer. And Alex Shiner takes a little bit of a hit in this article, which I would disagree with completely. I think he's a very smart guy who's seen a lot being in the NFL as long as he has been, and certainly has good insights as well. So, again, it's one of those things that, you know, it's better that it's happening now, I guess, than, you know, there's no game to be played on Sunday. There's no distracting from actual football or any actual football business. The coaches are here. They're getting to work on this team. The scouts are coming back next week. They're going to get to work on this draft and free agency, and the Browns are going to move forward. I think right now it's a lot of talk, and is it good talk? No, it's not, but it just kind of is what it is at this point.
It definitely is, and I think from, you know, where I weigh in on it all, just briefly, is you have a first-year head coach or a first-year head coach and a first-year GM that both of them can probably openly look at each other in their face and say, you know what, I got this wrong and this wrong and this wrong, and I want to improve in this way, in this way, in this way. And I'm sure they're both humble, because I don't – and then that's the one thing that I don't think exists here is both of them are positioning themselves in power. You know, they're both – essentially under the microscope, under Jimmy Haslam's microscope, on performance, because Jimmy Haslam has said since he got, or you know, took ownership of this team, it's a win now mentality, and it's a results driven mentality. And the way you opened, you know, your last little, you know, spiel there was the roster is better than it's been in the last 3-4 years
for sure.
They have more wins than they've had in the last 15 years, you know, besides maybe a year
since
or two
07.
Here
yep.
since 07. So they're giving you results, and I really do think the pressure is on, you know, Ray Farmer to go get knockout talent in that first round at 12-19 because of how underwhelming the first round was last year. But then you look at the back half of the draft, 2-7, he got huge value, and we hope he can replicate that again. And now Coach Pettine, in some cases, has no excuses in year two because he went out and got his guys. He's got his defensive staff fully intact. Talking to Joe Hayden, Joe Hayden is excited to not have to learn another new defense, but grow in the defense they had. So they'll improve right now. And I've said, you know, over the last coming weeks, it's having a definitive plan and everybody all in to go execute it. If they don't have that, then we truly are lost. But that meeting of the minds wasn't just to, you know, boost each other's ego. It was to figure it out. We hope they have. This article is going to be, you know, a foregone conclusion in a day or two, and we just hope that the men in power here execute that definitive plan and give us a winning product. And I think it starts at that quarterback position.
And let me ask you this: as a player, if you were playing for the Browns right now, and all this is coming out, and everybody, can this help be a galvanizing thing, kind of like an us against the world? Like, look, nobody believes in us, nobody likes us. Every day, people are taking shots at us, and the only way we can stop it is by getting it together and winning.
Slightly, yes. But in some cases, I talked as I opened the segment about this has never really happened anywhere that I've been. So, but there was some discourse between A.J. Smith, general manager in San Diego, and Marty
right.
Schottenheimer had some issues over personnel and control and things of that sort. And it was the rumblings of it, you know, in our organization. And it's hard to compare. This is kind of like apples and oranges because, as you said, you know, Deflategate and Spygate or the Baltimore Ravens, it's winning takes care of it all. So those rumblings all would come up every once in a while, but you go win football games, or you make, you know, you knock something out of the park in the draft, or you sign a big free agent, and all that goes away, you know, because winning solves all things. But I have never really been a part of it. And for me, if I'm a player, I think from the 53-man roster, you know, other than the, maybe the handful of guys that are here in Cleveland, where it's like, you know, the firestorm right now on every social media site and the cover of the newspaper and Cleveland.com and ESPN and all those you know, sources. If I'm in Texas, it's a blip on my radar because I'm living, I'm enjoying my family, I'm fishing, I'm golfing, I'm whatever. I'm enjoying my offseason. A friend might make mention to it, and then it kind of coincides with what I said about Josh Gordon. You know, get rid of the negative, you know. And in this case, it's speculation, you know, by someone who's not inside this building but is getting sources from that building, and that's why everybody wants to remain an unnamed source. You know, everybody wants to give that information so freely as an unnamed source, but I just want somebody to man up. You know
what
I mean?
Is that like a power play? What are they trying to accomplish? Because if these people want to leave, just leave then. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. They're stealing. They're stealing from the organization.
If you don't want to be here, I would say get out.
And in due time, Nathan, their name will come out and they'll no longer be here.
216-578-0850. Adam in Sandusky. Welcome to CBD.
Hi guys.
What's up, Adam? How you doing, man?
Nah, pretty good. Pretty good. Okay, here's a question. We all know it's very difficult to win in the NFL.
Yes.
And assuming this text gate, you know, happened and the reports come out and it's true, why as a GM, and if you hired me, say if I'm a coach, are you texting me on the sideline? And it's same on me on the sideline that I'm even looking at my phone during the game because I'm not focused on what's happening on the field. And here's another thing. If Petten has been talking about how they, you know, meet during the week about game planning and maybe the GM is there sometimes. That's the only time you should know about my game plan, and that's the only time you should care. So, like I said, why are you even texting me during the game? And like I said, again, if I'm a coach, why am I going to my phone?
That's one thing that I can speak on that I'll walk a hard line on is I do not believe a general manager should be included in any game planning in any week of the season. Or who plays or who doesn't. Because then I feel what he's doing is you're taking the power away from your head coach. And I know in our case, as you stated earlier.
In Green Bay or in San Diego, they met, though, during the week to talk about it?
Never.
Interesting.
Nope. And maybe over the only time a head coach or a special
teams
coach.
But typically, though, also true, the GM is picking the coach, so they know that they're like,
I was just going to go there, you know, and that's where, you know, there's been, some learning that has to happen on what the, and communication, lines of communication on how to communicate it properly. The only times that would become a conversation that a general manager would get involved in is that bottom of the roster, you know, that has to, you know, do we, so-and-so's hurt, do we downgrade him, you know, to PUP and upgrade somebody from the practice squad, or what's available? You go to your scouting staff and say what's available on the free agent market to add value to our team, and that cyclical type of stuff, but never on who plays and who doesn't, and especially not on what plays you call and what plays you don't. Never have I heard of that.
When we come back, let's go 216-578-0850. Let's go to Bobby in Amherst as well. Bobby.
Hey, guys. Great show.
Thank you, sir.
Just wanted to let you know right off the bat. But you know what? How long do we got to keep waiting? Here's what gets me, okay? We watch the Super Bowl Sunday, and we're getting people from southern Alabama and this and that. I mean, where's our scouts at looking for people in nooks and crannies?
Well, that's where we got Isaiah Crowell from Alabama State. We got Taylor Gabriel from Abilene Christian. We got Pierre Desir from Lindenwood. I think they did a very good job of sourcing talent at small schools last year.
Okay, I'll give you that. But you know what? It just seems like to me these guys that they go with the prolific names and everything, it just seems like these guys don't work out. And, you know, all right, Josh Gordon was a supplementary pick or whatever it was, the second round or whatever. And you know what? And he came in, he did a great job for us and everything, but where has he gotten us? You know, he hasn't gotten us anywhere.
Yeah, you're right. But you know what? And when you talk about big names, I mean, there's a few big names here in Cleveland, but you look at the team that won the Super Bowl, you know, there's a couple names, you know, that you recognize. Ravis, Gronkowski, Brady. Everybody else fits in their system and plays by the Patriot way under their coach,
Bill
Belichick.
There was one first-round pick on the Patriots' offense.
Exactly. That's my point exactly. So I think the fact that Ray Farmer has scoured, you know, the collegiate level to find talent and added the value, at not only added value and competition to this 53-man roster, but we had guys actively participate and make plays in big games for the Cleveland Browns this year as rookies. And that is an experience where some people might say, you know, 7-9 is a failure, but the fact that they're growing with in-game experience, as we saw with Johnny Manziel, his was on the negative side of experience, but we get to see what that product, that young product, looked like out on the field. You know, and so to have so much talent, you know, in some cases, like you see in other places like New England and like in Green Bay, they have so much talent that guys get to wait. That's a luxury. That is something that we're 2 or 3 years ahead of, but you have to win football games first.
You certainly do, and that would make a lot of this easier to digest. I'm just going to say my personal experience in working with Ray Farmer, that he's a very intelligent guy. He's a guy who played in the NFL, played at Duke in college, a smart guy, has a very good method, was put into a tough situation, I thought, last year with having to do the draft so quickly after being named the general manager. And I think overall, even when Mel Kiper's gone back and graded that draft and the talent acquisition that was made through the draft and with the undrafted free agents, it gave the Browns a very good grade, despite the fact that they literally got nothing out of their two first-round picks. Now, that doesn't mean that they will never get anything from those two, but right now, those look like two, for 1 year, swings and misses. But still, the draft overall was very effective. And I think that Ray Farmer is a guy who I think has strong football beliefs. I think he knows the game very well, having played it. And I don't know if that matters to you as a player, if you had a general manager who had played the game for you. And I do think that if you look at, again, the 53-man roster he inherited and the 53-man roster that he trotted out this year, you can't help but say Ray Farmer did a good job improving the talent of the Cleveland Browns.
Correct.
I don't think that you can even make that argument.
But
I don't think you can. So that's his job. If this text thing turns out to be true, did he do something he shouldn't have done? I'm sure he did, and I'm sure that that was handled, and I'm sure that was something that was brought up, and I'm sure it's also something that would never, ever happen again. And people learn from their mistakes if that is what happened. And if it's not what happened, then he'll be exonerated. But if it is what happened, I think he's going to have an opportunity to figure it out.
But I think with the world that we live in right now, the same way as right now it's college recruiting, you know, National Signing Day, and only the top 300 are getting recognized, or say even 25 of them are being publicized right now on ESPN announcing their college. Everybody wants to focus at the top. And I think that It's a hard pitch for some reason to individuals who are Browns fans that he got 2nd through 7 right, because the emphasis that Mel Kiper and Todd McShay and we as college football fans put on, if you're not a first round pick, in some cases you're irrelevant, you know, and we struck out not once but twice. And that is something that looms large as a dark cloud over this organization, and also to one being Johnny Manziel head over heels the city and everybody was for Johnny Football. And to have him fall flat on their face, that makes that, you know, that makes the thunderstorm in the cloud too even larger.
It certainly does. All right, when we come back, we'll continue to take your phone calls. Obviously, a lot to talk about here today. 216-578-0850. It's Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.